What's up, guys? I'm nobody special, and I'm supposed to be enjoying my day off today. And then, of course, the silver market broke. And so I have got my Liquid Courage is here with me, and I have got Idaho Armored Vault CEO Bob Coleman is here with me today to try to make heads or tails of whatever the hell happened in the market today. The story we're being told is that there was a cooling issue at a data center. Okay, that doesn't really hold water. Also, real quick, I'm just going to mention, guys, I'm doing this for my laptop with a somewhat moody technical setup here. So, if we have any technological issues, I appreciate your patience. And first, let's say hello to Bob. Bob, welcome back to the channel. Thank you for taking time on this Black Friday or Silver Friday, if you will, to talk to us. How are you doing today, Bob?
Good, good. How you doing? We're finally doing a live podcast without the silver market getting slammed.
Yes, without the silver market getting slammed, I mean, it's certainly not a slam today, but we had something today. I mean, you were awful cryptic in your messaging earlier, and you're normally cool, calm, and collected when it comes to these big moves in the market, and you have a very logical explanation, and you tend to be like, no, it's nothing too, nefarious or anything going on. But I'm getting a very different sense from you today. You seem to think you see something else going on, and it doesn't really line up with what they're feeding us about this data center issue. So, what is it that you saw that's got you so spooked about the metals market today?
Yeah, the data center issue to me is a non-event. It's not the reason for the sort of melt up, I guess, in the silver market. What I was told, and this started on Wednesday, is that there was a big buyer coming into the market, buying millions of ounces worth of silver futures contracts. On Wednesday, and you can actually see this with the open interest. It exploded up 7,000 contracts from Tuesday to Wednesday, which is roughly about five. Got about 5,000 ounces per contract, 35 million ounces of worth of futures contracts, which is about 1.9 billion in notional value. So there's a sizable increase in open interest. But what's more interesting was that the options market lit up. You had the same buyer buying just options as far out as $80 calls up to, I think, June 2027, but buying very high strikes. And from what I have been told, a lot of this news started to permeate after the close on Wednesday, and supposedly the buyer is Paul Tudor Jones. So it's not a central bank, it's not a man behind the cloth, so to speak. It's a very well-known name, individual or trader coming into the market. They came into the market, from what I understand, back in April when the market swooned from 34 down to 28 and a half. They came into the market buying very sizable call positions then, and that stopped the market, the downside in its tracks, started to break back to the upside. I am seeing the exact same thing all over again. And it's interesting because I started really the last couple of weeks, I started talking about, I had a post called Ode to the Shorts, which is, I guess, kind of an amusement to anyone who's trying to short this market, especially under $50 an ounce, just got absolutely lit up. But that was going to be the fuel for the fire. Once the market kind of had this consolidation and just did not have this breakdown that I think a lot of people were looking for and caught a lot of people off guard. I think a lot of people, traders got out of the market when we had that sort of double top. You had guys come into the market trying to short the market down, saying, "Aha, this is the double top. This is going to be, we saw sort of the massive amount of speculation in October and the froth and the sentiment going through the roof, especially in later October, and that basically may have called the top of the market." And you had that subsequent double top in November, and then you had the breakdown. But as the general market started to break down, you did not see the same thing happen with gold and silver. That's when I started posting these charts of these inverted head and shoulders. Sometimes I have a sense of humor, and I try to throw in some funny pictures in there. But some of this stuff I do it because it's somewhat of a and I say cryptic type of a message, but it's a way to try to explain the markets in a method that maybe is a little bit lighter in feel, I guess you could say.
So listen, I don't see anybody in the comments mentioning anything. Button in and out. It's on. I'm 99% sure the problem is on my side. So we're going to limp through this one here. I don't see anybody commenting in the live feed that there's audio issues. But I did catch enough of that to get the gist of what you're saying. Really, the idea that the big move in the price today, at least, was not at all related to this technical outage. So let me rephrase my question, Bob. Was, in your opinion, was the technical outage related to the move in price then? In other words, whatever you saw with the shorts and how, you know, they were expecting this big move lower and it didn't happen, did they just switch the machines off and did they just idea that it was a cooling issue? I mean, I know you obviously don't have firsthand knowledge, but do you suspect that's what happened?
Well, this event actually accentuated the short squeeze. It didn't prevent it. And so if you're trying to maybe look at the market structure in a way, by shutting, not allowing the market to trade freely, all of a sudden, whoever's on the wrong side of the market is going to get fried or burned. That's a given. But if you're short and all of a sudden the market seizes up, and you have that big, I don't know if it was a real move or if it went down to 49 or so or 50 bucks, it was like a big shot down. I don't know if those trades actually took place or not. But then I think it corrected and came back up. But as the market kind of settled itself down and started to rise again, that just basically put a magnifying glass on the entire asset class. It was probably the worst thing you could have if you were short the market and you're in the middle of a squeeze and you got this humongous money manager who's very well known globally, has a stellar record, you know, getting, if he's the one getting into the market and saying, hey, listen, I think silver's about to rip. The last thing you want to do is have an actual outage where you can't get out. So to me, that was somewhat of a situation that actually created even more sort of panic if you're on the wrong side of the market.
So sounds like maybe it could have been a coincidence. And if it wasn't a coincidence, it backfired and blew up in their face because it was just made people suspect things were even worse and caused almost a little bit of FOMO buying then in the market.
Yeah, and you have to remember this outage that took place was everything that was traded on the Globex. So it made it softs, energies, treasuries, currencies, that type of thing. Anything that wasn't traded on the COMEX direct market, or I'm sorry, COMEX, the CME direct market. So there was a lot of markets that were actually impacted by this outage. But you have to remember, this outage actually happened at a time where it's a holiday. It's very, very low volume to begin with anyway. If this would have happened probably on any other day during a market week where there's constant activity, you probably have you probably see more headlines, I guess. But because this happened right after Thanksgiving, but again, I'm not trying to make light of the event as the cause for silver. I think this move was building on Wednesday as more and more market participants started to see who was buying and what they were buying. Because when you start buying $80 call options, you're not looking for just a $1 or $2 move in silver. You're looking for an event. And I think that's what took the market by shock today, as maybe that news kind of started to filter through other participants and players in the market.
Now, you've also been calling attention to some things recently around the SLV ETF. Failures to deliver, and in particular around options expiration, where, I don't want to misquote you, but it really seemed like what you were describing was naked shorting of silver via the SLV ETF in order to suppress the price movement around options expiration. Does that have something to do with this price action we saw today, or is that just this other thing that's going on in the market that maybe is a little suspicious?
Yeah, I think the SLV thing is more to do with the option expiration week leading up to option expiration, which is the third Friday of each month. And then the day after that expiration, what I noticed was a very consistent pattern from really since June of this year, where you'd have almost literally no share creation or even a declining share creation, while short interest was actually, or short sale activity was actually rapidly increasing during that week of option expiration. And then the following Monday, you had this massive increase of share issuance, which would tell me, and you started to see short interest starting to rise in the middle of the month, and then decline at the beginning of the month. So there was this, obviously, a lot of the information I get is, it's public information, but it's reported twice a month, one at the middle of the month, one at the beginning of the month with a 2 week lag. So, you're kind of, we all feel like we're mushrooms, I guess, a little bit with some of these statistics that we get. But what I kind of gathered from it was this amount of short activity and short interest that the especially in October, you saw this gigantic 30 million shares increase in short interest. You saw the borrowing rate to 20% to borrow the shares and so forth. There's literally nothing left to borrow. All these types of things are telling me that I think it was a question of either suppression on SLV share creation, or potentially suppression of SLV itself. I don't know if, and that obviously being that it's the largest silver ETF in the world, that has overlapping effects on silver itself. So, but when you start to see some of these things, and especially when it's not a onesie or twosie, but it's a consistent pattern, with these numbers that are not small, you have to kind of look at this with a little bit more of a magnifying glass, I think, and a little bit more critical.
So correct me if I'm wrong then. Maybe the way this could work with the failures to deliver and the lack of creation of new shares, a typical gamma squeeze like we saw with GameStop or AMC a few years ago, as people pile into options, typically the market makers buy the offsetting. So people piling into options does move the underlying stock. Now, with something like SLV, it looks like for whatever reason that buying of the underlying shares wasn't happening. There weren't a lot of shares available. And what would normally happen then is you would create new shares of the SLV, and those SLV new shares, the ETF, would then go buy the underlying metal, which would put upward pressure on the price of metal. And so you would kind of get this feedback loop, which was kind of the goal of the silver squeeze back in 2021. But what they're doing is they're preventing the gamma squeeze then. If they don't actually create the SLV shares until after those options expire worthless, they're preventing that share creation silver buying from entering into a feedback loop with the options market. And then they just make it right as soon as the options expire. It's the delay allows them to absorb some of that buying pressure without moving the underlying metal. Am I Did I just make that worse? Did what I say, was that right? Or
No, you're right. Basically, the ETF acted as a sponge to absorb capital flow that would normally go to maybe force share creation, for example, with authorized participants saying, "Hey, listen, we don't have any more stuff." As authorized participants, you also can be the market makers. So what happens is if all of a sudden silver is tight in London, for example, and the cost of financing, the cost of carry, the cost of obtaining the metal has gone up. Well, in order to absorb that flow of money coming into that fund, the other avenue you have as a market maker under Reg Sho is you can naked short, and you can increase your short position to quote unquote maintain an orderly market. Now you have up to 30 or so days to actually settle that with clearing firms. So you may have these fails to deliver start popping up, and that's exactly what happened. The fails to deliver were just enormous. I mean, we've never seen this. Yeah, yes, on there was one or two day type spikes, especially back in January of 2021, you know, when you had that silver squeeze sort of day. But this was a basically cluster of days with a lot of shares failing to deliver on a consistent basis. And so it, in essence, what they were doing, what it appears to be, is that there was sort of this suppression of share creation, which would have put more pressure, like you said, on the silver market, which would have put pressure also on potential dealers that were short calls that had to then basically hedge as calls are going up in price, as well as, you have to remember, on a gamma squeeze, when volatility rises on a call option and also the intrinsic value is going up at the same time, that's what that gamma squeeze is. It increases the value of that call option and the likelihood of calls becoming in the money, which then could become exercised, which then could be, then would force share creation in and of itself. You just can't simply naked short when someone starts exercising calls all over the place. So this whole thing creates this sort of suppression, I guess you could say. And that's what I started noticing and picking up on. And this, you know, hopefully those posts, I'm not one that really is big on conspiracy theory and that type of thing. You know, I try to just read the markets and let the markets tell me what's going on versus me trying to create some sort of narrative. But when you start seeing some of these numbers kind of staring you right in the face, you know, you have to look at this and say, hey, this does not look like a normal everyday functioning market.
Now, guys, I want to take a step back from that for a second and really let that set in, because, Bob, you've come on this channel a number of times and you've been highly critical of the general narrative that the silver market is manipulated. And you've been very vocally critical of some people in the space, some dealers who tend to tap into those fears to try to move metal, driving premiums higher. So when I hear that from you, when I hear you saying the market, the tea leaves, look like manipulation, I pay attention to that. That means more to me coming from you in this situation. So, you know, give me your forward looking into your crystal ball here. Price suppression only works to a point, right? You can delay things, but the pressures tend to build up and eventually there needs to be a relief. That move we saw today, was that the relief valve? Was that suppression mechanism failing? Or are we just at the beginning here? I mean, I can't help but think of that 50-year cup and handle pattern. I know everybody's watching 80 to 2011 to today. So are we seeing this a big breakout here now? Or do you think we just maybe resume a little orderly march upward?
No, today's a big breakout. I mean, anybody who's short just got lit up. You know, you're underwater at this point. You're underwater with open interest starting to rise on the futures markets. And again, well, let me just preface, in terms of suppression and manipulation and so forth, this happens to do with just SLV, not the overall silver price per se. Yes, SLV can have an impact on the silver price. It's definitely it's a tool that can be used to interact with the silver price itself. But you know, the overall silver price itself, you know, you're talking the futures markets, you know, spot market, London market, Shanghai, you know, India, all these regional markets. It's a much bigger theme to try and manipulate the overall silver price. But you know, it can have these short-term effects that could, you know, that may have, you know, be able to shine a spotlight where there is enough tension or stress on a particular market that would potentially maybe create, you know, a drive or a move higher. You know, it's sort of like the idea when you know, Wall Street sees blood in the water, you know, that's when the sharks come out. And that's where if you're the one that's bleeding in the water, Wall Street will take full advantage of you. Well, by suppressing this potential action here with potential new share creation and so forth in a time frame when you had really tight supply, yes, it could delay that effect. But the market ultimately, in my view, always tends to win out. You like you said, you can only add so much artificial pressure on something until the market just, you know, it's like building a dam and that water just continually rising behind the dam. At some point it's going to overflow and it's going to break the dam. Well, what I've been noticing the last couple of weeks is, you know, you had, when the markets took a spin to the downside, the general markets, and gold and silver held very strong, silver was holding above 50 or trading around that 50 level, they were showing a lot of strength there. And I think a lot of shorts that may have come in, and unfortunately we won't get this data because, you know, the commitment of traders reports will not really become up to date really until, you know, end of December, early January. I mean, they're only going to be reporting stuff that happened 8 or 6 or 8 weeks ago, which doesn't help us any until, you know, this government shutdown, you know, the CFTC gets caught up with all the data. That's actually a bigger issue than the outage on the CME, by the way. You know, trying to read these things, trying to look at the open interest and look at all this type of activity, and you look at volatility ratios of SLV and GLD, and you look at the volatility premium and so forth that's trading at, and it's rising. All that stuff is telling you that there's building pressure in the market that I think is going to force this sort of melt up to ultimately happen. Now the question is, how fast does the melt up potentially happen? You know, as a investor in silver, for example, the last thing you want to see is this thing just go absolutely vertical, because then the question is the sustainability of the move. But that's what we're all trying to understand, I think, as investors, is you have, you know, the general markup market has been sort of in this melt up in 2025, and I think the metals are sort of going along for the ride, or maybe leading the ride per se. And then I think the metals in themselves, I think, have gathered strength from the Bitcoin and AI weakness that we saw, especially the last few weeks. And people saying, hey, listen, maybe the alternative asset to own if currency debasement isn't really digital, maybe it is gold and silver. And so you have this crossover of new money coming into the space at a time when, yeah, maybe short players are on a trading level saying, hey, listen, maybe this thing double topped. And it's like watching two currents, you know, hit the same time at different directions. And it just causes this sort of temporary or chaos in the markets, where one of those currents is going to be stronger than the other, and it's going to take that other current for a ride.
You know, you're right to point out that strength that silver and gold has shown. You know, we had that big rip in September, October. We went close to $4,400 in gold. We went about $54 in silver. And then we had the pullback that I think a lot of people were expecting a pullback, and we did get it. It took us down to about, you know, the high 40s is about it, and then right back to $50, and then held there while things like tech stocks, you pointed out, also sold out or sold off pretty violently. Now, Bitcoin has had a good day or two here. But silver has held up, and gold has held up very well in the light of some classes that sold off. So that is encouraging. And I couldn't help but have a Pavlovian response when you talked about shorts getting stopped out and getting clobbered in the market today. So we'll take a minute here for the state of Kentucky. That was, didn't mind seeing that one so much. Been waiting for that for a few years. Now, I do want to get into some of the geography, if you have a second. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I cut you off there. There's a little delay.
Oh, that's our moment of silence, I guess.
Yes. Yes. Let's have another moment of silence for the silver shorts today, shall we? We barely had a chance to get to know them. All right. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention some of the melon heads are active here in the chats as well. We've got Armando, and you can see the angst reflected in this comment. Every pillar of trust in American life. I mean, I put out videos over the last few weeks about pallet companies going bankrupt. I had a lot of fun with a porta potty company going bankrupt. You know, this perception of rigged markets today didn't help. You know, when we're told a cooling center or a data center cooling issue in Chicago takes down not just silver, it took down oil, it took down everything, options. I can understand a comment like this. And then Armando also says, This is what it looks like when society starts to unravel, a culture in decline and the collapse. Armando, that is a fine bit of dooming right there, if I do say so myself. But you know what? The shiny is holding up pretty well. So it's, there's a silver lining, if you will. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. The Pasta Man is here. He says, we'll know things are bad when the Fed accepts, I think he means to say data center credits, the magic money holding up the AI bubble in the repo market. I would like to exchange these data center credits for it. Yeah, that's just as good as money, right? It's an IOU, 1 hour of GPU rental that you can use to run your large language model. It's just as good as money if you're CoreWeaver, NVIDIA anyway. And again, metals holding up while the tech stocks are off. You were right to point that one out, Bob. Freckles is saying, thank you for today's video. You are welcome, Freckles. Ask me how my day off is going, guys. Go ahead. How my day off? Bob, how is your day off? Are you enjoying your day off, sir?
Oh, I never have a day off.
Day off, what's that, right? Jim, thanks again, Freckles. Jim Matari, he's been a Melonhead for 21 months, says, yay, $56 silver. Now, Bob, let me ask you, since he mentions a number here, Jay Watari, I was looking at the places I usually get my quotes today, like TradingView, Investing.com, Yahoo Finance, and the quotes I was getting were all over the place at the same time. Were you seeing that today too? Like just some crazy prices quoted? I saw over $57 on Finance and TradingView at one point. And then I looked over at Investing.com and it said change for the same December contract.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really, some of those I don't look at. We also have the roll going to March silver. So some of these sites may be posting March silver instead of December silver. You can be getting that. You know, the backwardation, I think it kind of closed in quite a bit today on the December contract. It's, you know, a lot closer to par. Spot price relative to the December futures contract. So you have some of that's going on. I can tell you right now, wholesaler feeds that I watch and everything, some of them were down today. Spreads have widened. I mean, this when you see an impact like this, the first thing that typically happens is everybody widens spreads because you just don't know where the market truly is or it's just so frantic or it's such a fast market that you have to protect yourself somehow. So I kind of understand that side of it. I don't know what some of the feeds, what their origination of their price action was.
Okay. That contract roll, that makes sense. It may into some of the quotes and why I was getting some wildly different numbers. That makes sense. I've also got Citrus MO says the conspiracy is they knew Jack was off, so they pulled some malarkey. Yep. It was all about not letting me have a day off. That's why they took down oil trades and stock options and futures and everything. Yep. It was all me. I apologize on behalf of everybody in the world. We're sorry, everybody. It was me trying to take a day off. I ruined it for everybody. This is why we can't have. Thanks, Citrus. We got a super sticker from Freckles. Which, Freckles, I don't have my iPad off to the right here like I normally have showing me what the super stickers are. So I just have to say thank you very much for supporting the channel. Jake's custom part. Thank you, Jake, for the orange one. He says, thanks, NSF and the mods. And Bob, while we're at it, thank you so much, guys. And yeah, my mods, they were supposed to have the day off today too. But they are here keeping things neat and tidy in the chat. Thank you guys very much. And you are most welcome, Jake. M&J gifted 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. The Melon Patch is growing once again. Thank you so much, M&J, for everything you do for the channel. Just a reminder, guys, you Melonhead members, you get a free super chat every month. Use that. We will read and respond to your questions live on the air. And my man, 4Ps, he's back again. Every time I try to say that name, I end up spitting at my camera, so I'm just going to say 4Ps. He gifted 5 more memberships. Thank you very much, guys, for supporting the channel. I appreciate all those super chats. Now, Bob, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you about, and it's something that I can't timing of it. It was 2 days ago, so, you know, this is late Wednesday heading into Thanksgiving dinner or heading into Thanksgiving Day. There's a story about tight inventory in China. There was an article in Bloomberg that the inventory in China was lower than it's ever been. East futures market had gone into backwardation, and that the reason driving this was that so much metal had left China, left Shanghai, and headed to bail out the shortage in London. And I know a lot of metal left New York and headed to London to alleviate the shortage. I remember watching the cost to borrow SLV shares and the cost to lease silver rates were up. So the metal came from New York and Shanghai into London to relieve the shortage. Now it looks like we've got shortages developing in Shanghai. Is it possible that these regional dysfunctions in the market may be contributing to this blowout that we saw in New York? I mean, could we have Chinese traders trying to source metal on the COMEX now because they're getting it in Shanghai? What role do you see that playing?
Yeah, I think China even mentioned that they were going to put in some export controls, I think, starting in January 2026, metal or silver exporting out. And my guess is that the levels got so low that, you know, they probably saw some degree of need to try to maintain an orderly market on their end. That's one of the reasons why when this market is a global story, when you start to see big time money managers coming into the space, and these guys are all reading the same stuff. We all read, X has been a great atmosphere for a lot of data to be dumped, some good, some bad, but to try and parcel through this, understand it, and so forth. You know, that story with China was brought forth by someone who follows that market very, very closely a couple weeks ago. So it wasn't really new news there. But, when you have players that watch this stuff and they start seeing the developments, like you had said, you start to see stresses develop regionally, even though maybe SLV had some really odd hanky panky stuff going on with it. The problem is that metal that was being used potentially to kind of cool the stress down in that regional location now developed fires in where that metal came from, so to speak. So when you're watching all this type of stuff, we're all watching this, this idea of, okay, how's this market forming? What's the structure going to look like? What's going to start moving it either to the upside or downside? And when you start seeing, the last couple of weeks, when the market started taking a nosedive, the general markets, and you start to see the selling pressure come out of nowhere I shouldn't say nowhere, but it started to really pick up in the retail space here in the U.S. And you started to see wholesalers, bids were collapsing, offers were collapsing on precious metal products. I mean, right now the bids and offers on a lot of these products are the lowest that they've been all year. In fact, even though the metals silver's at an all-time high, the higher these prices go, people are selling into it. They're seeing the volatility. They get scared of the volatility. They're thinking, okay, the thing's going to pull back. And so you have minimum required distributions coming in for IRAs. That's creating more selling. So trying to parse all this stuff out, you can't really read the retail market per se, except maybe if they've gotten scared during the market correction and that sentiment really dropped out of bed, that may have been a good setup from a contrarian standpoint. But you're looking at, that's just part of the story. I mean, India and Chinese buying, which has been, enormous this year. If you're now very low on inventory, that could be a center which premiums will probably start perking back up relative to prices over in London or say the United States. So you may see this demand for metal now to start moving eastward again from maybe moving out of China into potentially India or Japan or some of these other places that were over London that was willing to pay higher prices than what China was offering. This is why you have to do a lot of reading. It's hard to get stuck in this mindset of manipulation because the market is constantly breathing. It's constantly moving. You're just trying to analyze all the data that's being thrown at us from every direction.
This is going on while the paper market is going berserk. You mentioned some retail products there. We're still seeing premiums as low as I've ever seen them in my stacking lifetime. I bought a tube of American Silver Eagles for $2.35 over spot per. Just that was Wednesday morning. I bought those spot or junk silver, the 90% constitutional, 4.5, even 5% under spot because of the dysfunction, I guess, that's still going on with the refiners. Do you see any relief in sight with this refining situation and the backup in the market for 90% junk silver? Or do you think these low premiums are here to stay for a while?
Yeah, there's no relief right now because refiners want it's much easier for them to take in 3-9 fine metal rather than junk, which is 90% fine. It's just too costly and too time consuming to deal with 90% silver when you have so much 3-9 fine silver coming back. And you have to remember, refiners will use that 3-9 fine silver to sort of melt up, or I'm sorry, have a higher degree of fineness when they melt like ore and mining material. They'll use the 3-9 to kind of average that consistency upward, whereas 90% is basically, hey, this is just like mining ore, and you gotta have to, you know, go through the whole steps and processes of taking out all the impurities. So 3-9 is certainly much more viable at the moment. And that's obviously forcing prices. I mean, we're, I think, around $2 under spot for junk silver that we're selling to clients. But on the flip side, you know, the bids are not great. You're talking $5 under spot, $5.5 under spot for junk silver at the moment. And I know from what I've heard, a lot of refine or wholesalers have actually stopped buying junk, or maybe just started picking back up buying. But, you know, they're at 10-15% discounts minimum to buy the stuff back. That's not leaving a great taste in people's mouths that have bought junk silver over the years, that, you know, they see the silver price going up, and now all of a sudden either they have to take a bath selling it, or they actually can't even sell it to a dealer because the dealer can't unwind it to a wholesaler or to a refiner. So maybe at some point that premium will start to dissipate and normalize and get back closer to spot. But like we saw in 1980, when silver was around $50 an ounce or 49 back in 1980, I think that from what I understood, the refiners were only paying $38 over spot for junk silver at the time. And that was mainly because of the processing time and lead times it took to hold on to that silver until they could actually melt it down. And so there was that time delay, you know, goes into the factor of carrying costs.
So let me ask you something, Bob. I've been buying junk silver hand over fist these last couple of weeks, because I remember just a few years ago when the stuff was going for $7-$8 over spot, and now I see it for 2.5 under. And I'm on a long-term horizon here. I'm not in a hurry to sell this next week or anything. And I believe eventually the refinery market will stabilize and this stuff will go back to a more respectable price. Is it going to stay this way forever, or am I going to be left holding a bag because the refiners never start buying this stuff? Or is this just something that needs to work its way through?
You definitely need to work its way through. I mean, at some point the price goes up high enough. The industry, you know, the problem is we only have so many refiners in this country. If industry needs the product, they'll find a way to get the stuff refined and put into a format that, whether it's sponge or bars or whatever it may be, into a product that industry will demand and use as their supply. But you have to remember, junk silver, there's a lot of it out there, and especially this is the asset, probably the largest asset class that has been accumulated over the years. And it's very, maybe you could say, more demographic in nature. You know, the older generation kind of remembers, you know, potentially using silver and coinage. And the younger generation may like just simply the 3-9 fine, coins or rounds or bars, because, yeah, maybe it's just simpler or easier to understand versus, hey, this, you know, it's pre-64, pre-65 stuff, half of the heads are worn off on. I can't tell if it, you know, what data even is. So it may be more of a preferred product of the older generation versus the newer generation saying, hey, listen, I just want silver. And I want something that, you know, I can put in little tubes or, you know, rather than this junk bag. It's those types of things that you can't account for. But at the end of the day, you know, the junk silver, constitutional money, that type of thing, it's only getting older. So it's going to become more of a collector's item, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, they're not making any more of it, that's for sure. And well, it's cheap right now. And, you know, back in 2021, when the market was going crazy, I bought the generic stuff because that was cheap. Now I find myself buying things I never thought I'd buy, like American Silver Eagles 250 over spot and junk for almost 5% back of spot. So it's been pretty interesting to watch the dislocation in the market. And again, while all this is going on, the paper market is just going absolutely berserk, like a lot of us were hoping was going to happen back in 2021, and we didn't get to see that. So it's a little bit of delayed gratification, if you will, there. And I just want to say thank you very much, Mr. Arby Trash, who's also jumping in there, says, is it time to try to get the final super chat in yet? I do think we're coming about that. Every now and then, these guys, everybody tries to get the last word in the super chats. And, well, I'm not trying to stop them. Let's put it that way. Thank you, Arby Trash. And we've also got, man, I don't have my glasses on today. Sam, I can't say the rest. Sam, I'm sorry because I'm half blind without my shades on. He says, thanks for the awesome comment content. You are most welcome, Sam. Thank you for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. And also, Bob, I want to say thank you very much for taking the time to with us today and make sense of that. I apologize. We had some technical issues when we first started up here, but we got through them. And, well, it's been one heck of a day. I guess I'll give you the final word, Bob, as we wrap up here. Where do you think we're going? And I don't know, any parting words of wisdom for people trying to make heads or tails of it?
Yeah. One of the advantages of owning physical, I think, is not having to be, you know, in front of a computer screen with your finger on the mouse button, ready to hit the sell button at any time of volatility. And I think, you know, this is a testament, I think, to a lot of people that own physical, is that as a long-term investor, you're really playing the trend of the market versus the nuances of just the day-to-day movements. And I think especially a lot of people that got caught up in sort of the mantra of double top and sell a double top, you know, those are trading aspects of the market. That's not the trend per se. So you can catch these moves, but just trying to distinguish the two, you know, if you're playing options or futures or ETFs, you know, those are shorter term movement types of things, versus, you know, obviously holding metal, you know, again, running a hedge fund that I do, the metal that we have is all physical, held outside the financial system. You know, the idea of owning that physical is not to be shaken out. It's also to say, listen, if things do go awry, you know, this is basically the insurance policy against counterparty and systemic risk. And that's what we see sort of building here in the markets. As this melt-up kind of continues, it's this, you know, I think the metals kind of are this expression of disenchantment and sort of distrust in the system. And I think, you know, not knowing, hey, whether things are going to be at fat premiums or fat discounts, the spot, that's what that's the wholesale market. That's the retail market. We have no control over that per se. But if the price continues to rise, you know, that is really just a symptom of, hey, things are still wrong out there. They're not getting any better. And you know, that's where you tend to make more money, is following that trend versus, you know, all the small nuances of all these small trades.
Words of wisdom, as always, Bob. And, you know, I agree with that sentiment. I tend to look at my stack as a savings account or an insurance policy, as you mentioned. If you want to get creative, there's things you can do with the premiums and the gold to silver ratio, moving between the various products if you want to try to generate a little yield with it. But that's more of a hobby versus an investment and a get rich quick scheme. The idea is to get yourself out of the damn casino and into something that, like you mentioned, you don't have to sit there glued to a ticker with your blood pressure spiking every time it goes in the wrong direction. So, Bob, once again, I want to say thank you very much for your time, especially on Black Friday. Real quick, I want to say thank you to M&J, who says, say hello to your brother for us. Husband, he's right next to me here snoring up a storm because he had a heck of a day. I don't know if that came through in the audio or not, but I was on mute for most of that time because of that. So hi, David, from M&J and from all the Melonheads out there. Thanks again, Bob. Really interesting talk, as always. I appreciate your time. And everybody else, until next time, live small and dream big.